Welcome everyone to the Agency Accelerator Podcast, your turbocharged gateway to growth in the digital marketing landscape. I'm your host, Chris Quinn, the driving force behind Great Lakes Advisory. Our mission is simple but vital: systemize and scale your digital agency. Whether you're an owner, marketer, or digital agency leader, this podcast is your roadmap to success. Today, we're joined by Chris Madden, who is the co-founder of MatchNode. In today's episode, we unpack Chris's marketing playbook for sports franchises to drive ticket sales and attendance through social ads. So buckle up, listeners. Let's hit the gas and jump into our conversation with Chris Madden. Welcome to the show today, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. I'm super excited to be here. Really appreciate you having me.
Yeah, of course. I'd love to maybe set the stage for our audience today. And if you wouldn't mind maybe kind of sharing kind of the story behind kind of MatchNode's founding and kind of the mission in changing the way that people and its organizations leverage social media.
Sure. So the founding story is a fun one. My co-founder, Brian, and I, almost exactly 10 years ago right now, so 2013, went to the first Pearl Jam show at Wrigley Field, had some beers before, said, let's start an agency. That was Friday. And on Monday, we started going to a coffee shop. Tuesday was a co-working space, and we kept going. And fast forward 6 or 7 years, and the Cubs had built out this, the Chicago Cubs built out this entertainment district called Gallagher Way, and they hired us to promote all the bars and restaurants, hotels, things that they opened. And we were sitting in their new conference room overlooking Wrigley Field, and they had the Pearl Jam flag from that night behind glass, like framed on the wall. And so we told them the story, of course, and said, oh, wow, we've made some progress here. So it was a pretty organic build from point A to point B, and we continue to do a lot of work with pro sports, largely B2C, help the Gallagher Way bring people to campus, help restaurants bring people in to, you know, track back that revenue to an ad we might have run to drive that person in. And we do the same with financial institutions and insurance companies.
Mm-hmm. Was the model the same as that first co-working session when we first jumped in, or were we always planning to kind of attack it for, or approach it from more the B2C, more social media, or has kind
Great
of the,
question.
Your agency kind of evolved since that?
Great question. There were a couple things that we believed deeply that we didn't stray from. One was that we wanted to drive revenue. We wanted it to be clear to our clients what the return, or as clear as possible to our clients, what the return on investment was for our work on a month-to-month, even day-to-day basis. The second thing that was a little clearer in retrospect, and it took us a bunch of reps to really understand how different we were in the fact that we were paid social first. You know, we came to be, and we came really into our own in this world right as Facebook ads was taking off. And there were a lot of agencies around at least Chicago and generally that started in the SEO days or in the Google Ads days or building simple websites. And they'd be like, oh, we do paid social too. We were paid social first from the start. And it took, again, some reps and seeing how we were performing in the market to understand how different that was about us. So, but the ROI focus and conversion optimization and basically saying we need to not only make the ad, that's the message that the customer, our client's customer sees for the first time, but we also need to control the landing page because we can't say, oh, the ad's good, but your website's broken. So those things were we strong beliefs in the beginning, and we continue to work that way. Now, how that's manifested, we didn't have a creative team and we didn't have technical developers on staff. We do now, thankfully, and there's a lot of nuance in there and how that evolution, you know, specifically changed with iOS 14.5 plus when Apple changed the tracking game. And so there's a lot in there. So, but there were definitely some things that were true on day one that are still true. And then probably year one, year two, we started to write down our core values and things like that. And that became things that we have remained true. But there's been a lot of evolution therein.
Now, and along the way, you know, I think you mentioned Chicago Cubs. You mentioned like the Bulls, or at least
I believe you've worked with the Bulls in the past. I mean, these are some pretty high profile, globally recognized franchises. I guess, how did you kind of stand out in a pretty competitive social media kind of digital landscape to be able to land and secure some of those high profile clients?
Well, still to this day, I mean, there are so many digital agencies, and there are a lot of agencies that focus on paid media, as they call it. We don't really call it that, but a lot of people do. And even within that, when I really talk to that agency owner that seems competitive, there's always some nuance where it's different. So there's not that many agencies like us in Chicago that are so focused on social and ROI. And means generally that you're more focused on paid social. We do organic social also, but really paid social is where you can see those quick returns. And not just quick dollar returns or quick leads, it's also the insight, the turns on the insights on a weekly basis is unique from a strategic perspective, I think. I don't know of any other platforms where you can really get that. So that mix of things still makes us different. And how we got the Gallagher way, like we do not sell tickets for the Cubs. MLB does that for MLB teams. We promote all of the entertainment district. Again, there's a hotel, a handful of bars and restaurants, the square at Gallagher Way where they have movies and people do yoga and all sorts of different events, concerts. So we promote all that stuff, not tickets to the baseball games. That came through a relationship, which, Chris, you have an agency. We're in an agency peer group together. That came through a really close agency relationship in Chicago. Orbit Media, Andy Cressadina, everybody knows Andy. He's the most helpful, one of the nicest people, period, not just in the industry. So no surprise, it was a help from Andy that we got Gallagher Way, an introduction. He saw that they needed us and we were a good fit and we won the business. Totally separately, the Bulls were just filled out a form on the website. And you know, those were exciting moments and they were important for the business. And I grew up a Bulls fan in the Michael Jordan era. So it was a dream come true for sure. At the same time, I believe that it was the result of just a lot of work over years. You know, it was work in year two that nobody saw that helped get a okay client that nobody knows about, that helped us learn things, that got introduced to somebody else that got us a slightly better client. So we just like keep leveling up our game. So the compounding value of daily work is, I think, one of the things, excuse me, my co-founder and I agree on, is like showing up every day and doing stuff. And some of it's impactful and fun, and a lot of it isn't. And you know, try to manage over the years. We've definitely gotten better at making sure people are doing more of the things that they're good at and like doing. So it was a lot of things that added up to position us to get that business. And then once we got the Bulls are great partners and it helped us. We got the Chicago Blackhawks, unrelated to the Bulls somewhat, but they definitely helped give us good references. And then we've gotten a handful of other sports teams as well. So it's definitely become a niche for us. It suits who we are as well. The people on our team and our co-founders are you know, relatively excited to go to sports games and work with these teams. But there's definitely nuts we've cracked for financial services and, you know, other forward-thinking established brands that are navigating the shift to digital, particularly during COVID and after. We're definitely that agency that some of our established brands come to and say, hey, we've got this hard nut to crack. Can you help us crack it? And usually the cracking of the nut means we need a return on this investment for the money we're putting into these ad platforms. But there's something sticky on the front end, like restaurants. It's not particularly easy to track, but we can do it in certain ways. So yes.
Talk to me a little bit about some of the data that's available when it comes to kind of sports marketing and some of the advanced kind of like real-time leads and kind of conversions. Clearly, there's kind of a ticket sale component of kind of sports franchises that maybe you wouldn't normally be able to easily track with maybe some restaurants. Talk to me about kind of how you're able to like optimize and run those campaigns effectively.
Sure. So underneath your question is some clear ideas that I think are right, where tracking an online purchase of ticket that happens on the internet should be cleaner and more easily trackable and more real time than I see an ad today. I talk to my wife and a couple friend of ours, and we decide we can go to the restaurant I saw the ad for in 2 weeks. And then we go in and we spend money in 2 weeks. And tracking that revenue for the restaurant is much more challenging generally, but there's been some breakthroughs, I think, that have really helped us bridge that gap for restaurant clients. In the sports ticketing example, as simple as it could or should be, there's also some nuance because oftentimes it's Ticketmaster. And so it's not like ChicagoBulls.com. First of all, it's NBA.com/Bulls. So then there's who owns those pixels. And Disney, frankly, owns a lot of the pixels through ESPN and has like, they play very nicely and they're happy to collaborate with us without some change we might need to track the Bulls ticketing correctly. But the connection between the Bulls website and Ticketmaster, and of course, Ticketmaster's dealing with all of the teams almost, and all of the sports and all of the concerts, and they need to deal with each franchise to make sure that like the ticket data from Ticketmaster.com is passing correctly back to the Bulls website. And then we are connecting that back to the ad platforms to see if we drove that sale. And so all of those steps, as you can hear, there's people that talk to, there's things that might be broken, and we can see when it's working. And so we take the lead in helping those things get connected for all of our clients, but it's particularly nuanced when there's that third party back end. And it's not always Ticketmaster. There's a company called Fevo that does a lot of sports ticketing for special events. They have a different set of implementations to connect all that data correctly. So even in the simpler situations, not simpler, but the more real time situations, there's a lot of connecting and development that our team is able to do to make those connections happen. As Facebook was changing things, because of how Apple was blocking tracking or giving you the people permission to block the trackers, all these tactics that Facebook was using to provide data and model data were changing. And so what Ticketmaster was getting was changing. And so there were things that we saw real time in one of our team's backends that were brand new. Like, this was not there yesterday, it's there today. We can click a button and connect this thing. And then we hop over to our other teams. Sometimes we don't see it. And so there's a lot of that kind of stuff of making sure a change happened. It's not being tracked as correctly. It's actually an opportunity. Let's track it. Let's see if we can go do that for our other clients. And that's not just within the sports industry. It can lead to an insight for a client in a different vertical. You mentioned restaurants. I can go further there. There's similarly third parties. People are familiar with OpenTable, but there's others like Seven Rooms. Seven Rooms we like a lot. When a would-be client is using Seven Rooms, it means we can really connect the data at the table, the money that is spent back to the ad much more cleanly through their POS. So there's a lot there. In general, it takes a sophisticated restaurant and a sophisticated, say, bank that is trying to close loans over 30 to 60 to 90 days. It takes a sophisticated player in those industries to get real-time data that's anything like what sports teams can get selling a ticket.
Mm-hmm. I think you kind of already maybe alluded to some of these points, but I'm kind of curious. Obviously, like for sports franchises, driving sales is probably influenced in some part by the play, either on the ice, on the field, on the ballpark, or some of the celebrities. But I'm kind of curious, what do maybe some sports franchises get wrong when it comes down to driving ticket sales through social media? There's clearly some organizations, franchises out there that are just their ballparks or their stadiums are nearly empty. They might still have a decent like all-star. They might still be playing different, but they might still be playing decent, I guess. But like apples to apples, where do you think some sports franchises are getting it wrong when it comes to running social media marketing to be able to drive sales?
Well, I think a general objection that we run into is that the best teams sell out and don't need our services necessarily. When the Golden State Warriors were on top of the world, they're still really good. But when they were winning all those titles, we saw somebody speak who was selling tickets, and we're all just like, pretty easy to sell tickets for the Warriors right now. Just like it was easy to sell tickets for the Bulls when Michael Jordan was playing. or if LeBron James is on your team, it's not that hard to sell out your arena. So those teams tend not to be looking for us. The worst teams tend not to believe that it will work. So we get a lot of people who say, oh, yeah, that works for the Bulls, but we are a hockey team in Canada or New York State, let's say. I don't want to be too specific to criticize any market because it was a real discussion. We've had this discussion multiple times, not just NHL, other NBA teams too, to say, oh, that works in Chicago, but we're a smaller market, or we're one of the worst teams right now. And, you know, so we work with the Arizona Coyotes. They had a very acrimonious relationship with their building they were playing in, relatively acrimonious relationship with the fan base, I'd say. And we were able to drive ROI for them, you know, over the end of a season in that one building. They switched to a new college size arena with 5,000 fans in it, 5,000 seats, and were able to drive solid ROI in both instances. So I'm proud of that. And we do use that in talking to teams where you should, like, it is when you're struggling to sell tickets that you should look for us, because we're able to bring people into the arenas for other reasons. The team is not the best team on the ice or on the court or in the standings. There's so many other reasons to go to a game. When we were in Arizona, the air conditioning stood out. It was freezing in there. It was like 100 degrees, and they keep the arena so cold because people are looking for cold places to go. Obviously, it was a hockey game as well, so it makes sense. But at the United Center, there's so much going on. We work with the United Center to sell luxury suites as well, separately from the Bulls and Blackhawks. And just, there are people looking for a night out, like a night at the United Center, even if you're not a huge basketball fan, can be pretty exciting. So there's matchups. So you could be a NBA team having a bad season, but LeBron James is still coming to town, and you should be promoting that night with ad spend, because otherwise there's going to be a bunch of people that would buy tickets through these ads that otherwise wouldn't. Same thing with promotional nights. Almost every arena and team, minor league, major league, every sport has promotional nights, where, you know, whatever, Star Wars night, you name it, and those become opportunities to reach into an audience with a slightly different message or a slightly different hook to bring them into an arena. So the biggest mistake, I think, is thinking that it's not for them. I think I'm biased, but I think this does work for every NBA and NHL team, and there's reasons why we say those leagues specifically.
Are there, like, maybe some common creative themes when it comes down to, or like the content that you're putting out, or yes, kind of what it actually looks like when it comes down to, because I mean, for some of the folks or any of our listeners, the Coyotes, I don't think this is really that controversial, they were not necessarily the best team in the entire league. They were probably towards the bottom quartile of the entire league for many years. They had a little bit of a smaller stadium, but clearly through some of this social media work and some of the creative work, you're able to generate ROI and drive greater ticket sales. So I'm kind of curious, when you don't have those star players, you don't have great play on the ice or on the field or in their arena, I guess, what are some of the themes, creatives that you're seeing drive a lot of conversions, engagements from your campaigns?
Well, in general, when we're working with sports teams, we think of when we're at the front end of a season and we're planning creative for the year, we break things into proactive and reactive creative. And so proactive is all the dates that we know ahead of time and we can prepare for. So we have all the promos. So we know that in Arizona, they did a Thor night. Yeah, the movie Thor had just come out, and they were giving away, there was some cross promotion where they're giving away a Thor doll to the first 1,000 people or whatever. And there's, you know, things throughout the night in the arena that they're doing. And it works, you know, in pretty obvious ways for us to promote and message and find audience for that. And that's one example of 15 or 20 they do throughout the year. That happened to be at the end of the year. But at the beginning of the season, we know those nights and we can plan out all that creative. It's not just promos, it's matchup-based creative. So the Bulls know when LeBron James is coming to town. They know when the Bucks are coming and Giannis is coming. They're like, there's certain nights that you just know that there's a bunch of those fans that live in Chicago and want to come out, or just fans that want to see that particular player. So those things, again, we can get way ahead of our creative team, their creative team. We can produce and make anything needed, but oftentimes, sometimes clients want to have their own team make creative to some level, and then we pick it up and we'll adjust it for the ad network sometimes. And sometimes we do it from beginning to end. But the point is, we collaborate with them on what the creative should be. And then the reactive stuff is more interesting. And the reactive stuff does tend to happen when something positive happens in a game, which even happens for teams that don't win a ton. But it is more relevant for a team that's playing relevant games, because it's, you know, Zach LaVine scores 50 points against the Knicks on Friday night, and then they're playing the Knicks again on Sunday, for example. I'm making that up. We might want to have an ad up on Saturday with the highlights from that game if Sunday is undersold. And that's the other thing, too. We're in constant contact with the client to say, you know, actually, the team's on a road trip for the next 3 weeks, so there's not as much to do. Let's prepare for XYZ that we know is coming. Or the opposite. We've got 5 games in 10 nights, and 3 of those games are a little bit undersold. What can we do to push those? And so we might do a creative turn to push that out. So that's more reactive, and it can't just be a market condition like that. Oftentimes it's something that happens in a game, because all of these clients, the Coyotes, the Bulls, the Blackhawks, on and on, have a team of people in the arena every night that there's, you know, thousands of people and a pretty exciting game going on. And so they're recording all of this, and we oftentimes are accessing those banks of footage, images, video, so that we can drop them into a templatized reactive thing. That is a goal to get to. We can't start there. It takes a lot of time, takes a lot of trust being built, takes the systems being there on both sides and it to make that all happen. But that is where we get to, and that's how we think about the different types of creative that might come up throughout the year. And again, this is all paid, so the teams are handling organic. For sports teams, organic is very relevant. But again, they have, you know, the Bulls have a 10 or 10 plus team of content developers that are in the arena shooting Benny the Bull, shooting the games every night.
Yeah. I guess for Matchnode, I guess from just maybe a management level, I guess, how are you managing kind of consistently throughout the season some of that reactive work? I mean, the proactive, maybe it's a little bit easier to kind of plan around. We know when all of these games are coming into town, but like, it's impossible to be able to, I guess, predict when Zach LaVine's going to drop 50 and like on the same team versus when they're coming in town again. I guess, how are you planning? I guess clearly you can set up templates, kind of streamline some of this work and make it a little bit easier to create these creatives. But I guess, how are you like planning from maybe a budget, a time perspective, from a capacity standpoint, when it comes to actually executing on some of the reactive elements of a particular campaign?
Good question. We have to be clear ahead of time in the scope that this is included and we're going to operate in this way. We're continuing to review how we do that. Creative is becoming a bigger and bigger part of our business. And both from the team we're hiring and building, we continue to add more people on the creative team, I'd say faster than any other part of the rest of the business. And clients continue to need and ask for more creative, and it continues to become a center of more and more discussion. There's lots of reasons for that. And so we're super cautious about how we hire people. And that is a lesson we learned early in the agency days of how to hire. And I think we've gotten much better at that. So that's number one, is we've hired people on our creative team that are awesome and excited and happy to, have a good reason to make a good turn of something on a Saturday morning. And that happens rarely. It's not like our team is working on Saturdays and Sundays frequently. That's not the case at all. But if it does come up once a quarter and it's, you know, 40 minutes of work, they're happy to do it and we're happy to do it. And in general, if it gets out of bounds where we're doing too much work relative to the scope, of course, that is a discussion that gets triggered, and that's something that we continue to put in our agreements, is like, where is the upper bound of this? And then, of course, that would roll into a discussion we have to have. The teams are very seasonal, of course, so those are annual agreements. So it just becomes something that we tend to discuss at renewal times to increase, change the scope, increase, change the fees. Sometimes we add, like for one team that renewed recently, we added creative strategy, which we were not doing. So we had this kind of, they were telling us what to make. And now the relationship is changing where we're deciding together what to make, which we love because we see all the insights back from the market. We see what's working with other teams, other businesses. And so, but it takes our team more bandwidth. So that's the sort of thing that costs more money. If they all of a sudden want us, we didn't agree to do TikTok, and all of a sudden they're asking for a bunch of TikTok creative, we'll make it. But then again, that's something a new platform would trigger an increase or change in fees. So we just put guidelines in place so we know when it's time to have another discussion about the scope and the fees. Process wise, again, hiring the right people and then having systems in place. So I certainly know that you're a systems person. And so the very simple things like Slack and how we manage Slack and what that is used for and the communication with the clients, not the only communication, but something real time like that. Oh, something happened. Like, what is our policy and how we're going to respond to that? It also is like, we are lucky to have good clients and good people who on the client side who are respectful and understand that they're asked what they're asking for or what that means in someone else's life. So we're lucky we haven't had too many problems over the years where that wasn't the case, where the client wasn't respectful of the time or our work or whatever. So generally it happens so rarely, and we know the person so well, like, of course we'll do that for you because we've been working with you for 5 years and you've asked for this 3 times and there's a good reason for it. So it's all those things, but really I think the most important thing is having clear guidelines and where the scope is out of bounds, and then you have a discussion to change.
Yeah. Is a lot of that driven by kind of communication, the relationship with that client, or are you even, I guess, requiring your MatchNode folks, maybe the account manager, whoever's assigned to that client, to essentially watch every single game and almost break down and kind of like understand some of the trends that happened in that game and how it could potentially impact future games? And
like any client, it helps if we and the people that are working on that business are using that business, fans of that business, eating at that restaurant, fans of that team. And that's another thing that's fun about having sports clients is it's not hard to find people who are excited to work on those accounts who are fans of those sports or those teams. So there's often a natural fit where someone's a clear Bulls fan or a basketball fan, like let's have them work on that account versus someone who doesn't care about sports, which we also have and is completely fine. So there's some common sense element there where yes, of course it matters, but no, they don't have to watch the games every night and know what's going on. These sorts of special moments where something really jumps out, we're talking 3 or 4 times a year. You know, the Blackhawks won the lottery and the rights to get the number one pick in Connor Bedard. And that is a franchise changing moment. And as soon as it happened, we were like, whoa, in our ads, not because of anything we did, but just because our ads were out there just in the moment, like they almost always are, to sell tickets to Blackhawks games. We could see the return just, you know, go to like 1,000. Like it went from, you know, it's normally at 5 to 10 and it literally went to 1,000. And so more so though, the night that the Bedard technically is not a member of the Blackhawks franchise until the draft actually happens, which is another 6 weeks or so. So now we had these 6 weeks to work with their team, and their whole team, their whole entire franchise is changed because of that moment, because of the ability to pick this player. And so the next 6 weeks wasn't, you know, one of many things we're doing is like, oh, the draft is going to be on this night. The second that the Blackhawks pick Bedard number one, can flip on ads that are selling his jersey. They could not sell his jersey. There are people making, like, you know, custom ones with his name and number on it, but you couldn't go to NHL.com and buy the jersey until he was technically on the Blackhawks. As soon as we had that, you know, we flip on ads and we're selling all sorts of things. So that's the kind of stuff that happens. It's not It's only been like once or twice over years. Unfortunately, the teams haven't been awesome, but maybe it would be different if the teams were going on 25 game winning streaks, just things that were historically good were happening on the court. But it's normally not a huge surprise. And when it happens, it's usually a fun, positive thing.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring us home with a final few questions. You're a strong advocate for kind of Web3, and you've had an NFT project in Seedbums. I guess, how should some of our audience members or digital marketers today be thinking about kind of incorporating Web3 into some of their website, maybe some of their clients' work, and being able to kind of leverage kind of the trends within there?
Well, I mean, to the degree that there's a long-term openness on the internet and that we believe that things are going to continue to be person first, like thinking about your customer before anything else, I don't see how those trends don't lead to all of our clients' customers owning their data, giving their data to us as companies when and if they want to in the right amounts, not oversupplying information and not having to continually fill out a new, you know, medical form with the same information every single time you go into a doctor's office. And so there's a lot there, but I just believe our phones are essentially already almost cryptographic devices. There's moves in this direction so that it will be protected cryptographically in the same way that a crypto wallet it could be, where I would buy NFTs or hold Ether or Bitcoin or something like that. Incidentally, I started an NFT project that donated $140,000 to Ocean Charities, and it was a really wild ride and a lot of fun. Part of the inspiration and legitimizing ideas I got around that before I started it were because the Bulls and other NBA teams and other big brands that were our clients were delving into this world as well. And so the first NFT I ever owned was a Bulls NFT. And it was just a really fun experience. And I had been deep into crypto for years before that. And so, especially in the business we're in with the two behemoths of Google and Facebook driving Google and Meta, driving so much of the work that we do, I see the pros and cons of that. I see the pros and cons of Apple being a closed system. And I just believe deeply in an open system, and having gone as deep into crypto as I have, now having dozens of wallets with all sorts of NFTs all over the place. And the other thing I would leave people with is don't expect it to look like the last NFT craze is not going to be the next. They might still be called NFTs, they might not, but they're just going to be like receipts for your business or any sort of loyalty or any sort of thing you want to leave with your customer digitally, including it can change as art. This is a work of NFT art. We've got a couple of NFT artists here in my home office. So I would say open your mind and think of like how diverse the idea of a web app can be, or the idea of, a mobile app or a website. Like that's what NFTs can be, and that's what they will be. So they're not just going to be JPEGs with data appended. There's so much more that they can be. So restaurants is a super obvious one. Starbucks is now a great example of, they're not calling it NFTs, but their loyalty program is now called Odyssey. You get these stamps for doing things. They are tradable NFTs that are trading and have value now, but that's not what Starbucks is creating them really for. So there is so much there, and we continue to keep our eyes super open to it because we think that the next bull run of these sorts of assets is going to affect all of our businesses. That's the last one.
Got it. Another one of our final questions, what are you most proud of at MatchNote?
Good question. There's a lot of different ways I could go with this. I'm proud of my co-founder relationship and of our client list and the people that work at our clients. But the real answer is that, and it surprised me, because I didn't get in the business to have employees. But what I'd say is that there are a few employees that we have that have been with us for a long time. And one of them just had her 5-year anniversary. And I said, I'm proud that MatchNote is a place that you want to work at for this long and stay at. I think that, as an entrepreneur, the ability to build the business that you want to work in is an opportunity and a responsibility. And so I'm proud that we've got really good people that enjoy working here and want to keep working here. And these are dynamic people that are changing and growing. It's not a person that sits in the same job. So I'm proud of the growth of our team.
Nice. It's amazing. And finally, if you knew you couldn't fail, what is one thing you would do today to accelerate your agency's growth?
You said the last part, because as soon as you said that, I was thinking, I want to ride a rocket ship to either Mars or the moon. Not sure why. That's immediately what was in my head. If you knew you couldn't fail, I'd be like, of course I would go to space. But to accelerate my agency's growth, I mean, it's such a boring answer. It's the opposite answer of riding a rocket ship, but it is just the advice that we're working on, we continue to follow and are continuing to do, of take the list of the 300 clients you want. We don't want 300 clients. We want like 50-ish, but the 300 companies that you most want, and just do nothing in your sales and marketing, but try to talk to those decision makers. And it sounds so simple, and yet when you sit down to do all the things that we do for B2B marketing for our agency to get more clients, it feels like it is never that simple. So if you knew you couldn't fail, or just find those 300 people of whom we need to capture, you know, 50, and just do whatever you could to build relationships with those people.
100%. I couldn't agree more. Before I let you go, where can our listeners find you? And is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience today?
I would say, please go find us at matchnode.com. That's where you'll see all of our recent content. You'll be able to find ways to get in touch with me. My LinkedIn link is on our about page, as is for the rest of our teammates. And no, I think we've said it all. I've super appreciated being here, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Really enjoyed the conversation. Everyone, make sure that you go check out Chris Madden. We'll have all of his information, bio and LinkedIn, and link to MatchNote in the show notes. Really appreciate the conversation today, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great day. Appreciate it.
That's a wrap on another episode of the Agency Accelerator Podcast. A big thank you to our stellar guests for sharing their wealth of insights. Be sure to check out our show notes for helpful resources. And if you found value in today's episodes, please share it within your circles and make sure to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform and join our channel on YouTube. We're always interested to hear your feedback and suggestions, so feel free to reach out to us on social media or via email. Until next time, keep your foot on the gas, keep accelerating.